Good morning, everybody, and welcome back to the Authentic Agent Podcast. I am very excited today. This is good timing for me to have Steph Levine back in, and she is back for her second go-round with the Authentic Agent. So welcome back.
I'm so honored. Thank you.
So for some of you, if you've heard the first podcast, you know that you're in for a treat today because we kept it pretty surface on the first podcast, and we wanted to do more or less a light introduction to what it is that you do. Today, we intend to go a lot deeper. So we're going to be talking a lot about mindset and self-love and the role that those things play in overcoming your perceived limitations and building the business and really the life that you desire. So welcome back, Steph.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
I love it. I love that you're here. But first, before we get started, I want to thank our sponsor, Magnus Title and Angela Kiernan.
Go, Angela!
Yeah, Angela's very popular in our circles, and she is very well known for her work and her hustle and her team. She really is pure hustle, and her team does value client service and just elite-level professional communication. So your clients will love them, and your business will absolutely feel Angela's impact. So we put her contact information in the comment section. You can always reach her on Facebook or give her a email or a phone call with that info that we put down there. You can always reach out to me, and I'm happy to get you in touch as well. So,
can I put a little plug in
you
for can. Angela
You're,
here
I'm
too?
I'm sure she'd be okay with that.
So one of the great things about Angela, and those of you in real estate know that there's a lot of title people out there, a lot of talented title people out there that have great tools to help us grow our business. Angela takes it a whole different level. She actually works as a consultant. And a coach, really. Mm-hmm. And being a coach myself, I love overhearing when Angela is talking to an agent about ways that she could pull their strengths out and bring it out to their clients. And then she can pull, she just has this like bag of tricks, like a Mary Poppins bag, where she can just pull out whatever's in alignment with that agent's gifts and build their business accordingly. So
yeah, and she works with a lot of very talented people. So she has insight into the way that those people think and the way that they run their business. And of course, she has permission to share all of those things. So very well connected individual. So give her a shout. Back to Steph. So Steph, I loved our last podcast. It was a lot of fun. We talked about, you know, visual coaching and how it can be effective. We addressed naysayers and just some of the stuff, and we're going to do a lot of that today. Matter of fact, we're going to dive a lot deeper into this. We're also going to bridge this whole thing to capitalism again and just business and money, because, you know, in our industry, in our world, that's what we're doing, is we're using tools and coaching like yours to help us achieve results, not only in our personal life, but in our professional life. And
goes hand in hand.
It really does. It really does. But if you haven't, or if you're not watching live on Facebook, this studio is as colorful as I have ever seen it. You brought in some paintings. Tell us a little bit about this. Like, where did all of this come from?
Oh, boy. It's funny because it's always been inside of me, and I've been putting it on the back burner for many years. I used to play around with it back in the early 80s even back in high school, I played around with it. And I guess I just never thought I could really do anything with it. And the call came stronger a few decades later, where I started playing around with hand-painted kids' clothing. Once I got into real estate, put that on the back burner. And my coach, Allison Crow, shout out to Allison Crow, she is a very creative coach and uses a lot of visual. She's actually what turned me on to get certified with Christina Merkley in visual coaching. She would invite people to her house for a coaching experience, and we would play on the canvas. And there's a lot of metaphors for life on the canvas.
Tell everybody what visual coaching is, and how does the painting come into play with all of that?
Yeah, so that just happened organically, and it's going to be a big part of my business. It is already. It's happening as we're speaking, that it's morphing into a big part of my business. So visual coaching is any kind of coaching where I'm pulling out people's dreams. I'm taking what's inside of them, helping them clarify and move in the direction that really they want to. I'm helping them think bigger. I'm helping them believe in themselves to achieve. My mission statement is to help others achieve their perceived impossibilities and beyond. And with visual coaching, I get to literally and metaphorically draw their dreams out. So like you, last time when we met, you shared your experience of your future self. And I took you through a guided meditation in that specific session. There's bazillions of different things I can do in the session. But in that one, I took you through an experience and you got to meet yourself in the future. And I took notes on everything that I was prompting you to tell me. And then you went on your own journey in that. And I took notes on it and then I drew it for you.
Tell people what that looks like. You're referencing my experience with you and that journey. What was that? Because I think it's important that people know, like, there's a process that you take people through. And I think that it starts with sitting down with you in a very meditative environment and closing your eyes and taking some deep breaths. And what I loved about it is you had me focus on what my vessel was going to be. And I chose a red Jeep, an old red CJ Jeep, and that was my vessel. And you utilized that vessel and you took me through a journey of kind of self-discovery. And it was interesting because, I really had no idea what to expect. I had no agenda going in other than I wanted to remain open and discover, a little bit more about myself and what drove me. And not enough people do enough inner work, self-work. And we've talked about that a lot on the podcast. And I think for a number of reasons that we'll get to today, of course, with just the fact that people think it's airy-fairy or that, there's a lot of eye-rolling around this kind of topic, but it also exists in many different forms in the business world, even up to the highest levels. And we'll talk about that. But first, let's walk people through. I sit down or they sit down with you. Like, what is the first thing that happens?
For that specific type of session you're talking about, sure. Not just all my other coaching programs. So with that specific session, whether it depends on where we are. In your case, we were in my office, the tranquility zone. And it's very much by design, and at the same way, it's very organic, that it's just a very comfortable place to go. You used to just go in there and meditate or take a nap, and it just creating an environment that's non-threatening. It's not sterile. It's just comfortable. And then I just talk to them for a while. It depends on the relationship. Just get them to the point where they feel relaxed. They trust me. And that's a really, really big piece.
Sure.
And it happens in my experience. I really, so far to date, have never really had anybody that I've had any pushback around it. That obviously, if they pay me and they drive to my office, they're open enough to get something out of it.
Right.
So.
But you're also very good at helping them feel comfortable and allowing them to trust you.
Yeah.
But also when they come, they've got to have a certain level of trust in themselves too, because they've got to trust in the process and they've got to give themselves over to it and just be okay with it. And a lot of that is wrapped around flipping the switch of the ego to the off position.
Right? Yeah, and sometimes that is a little challenging during the experience. So I'm going there. I let these downloads that I get, my intuition just takes over, and I know how to help people get unstuck for the most part. I've really never had an unsuccessful session that way, as far as having them, like, nobody's ever gotten up and walked out. And yeah. I'm not saying that's never going to happen. It's beautiful. It's beautiful watching that unfold, and I go there with them. I was in Montana with you when we took your journey, and if they start going into their head, sometimes I'll just remind them, get back to their breath, get back into your body, listen to that first thing that came up before you started squashing it with your reason and your logic and your self-judgment, and often some self-loathing there too.
Oh, certainly.
So this is a complete exercise in self-love. That is my mission in life, is to teach self-love. And I get to practice it if I'm going to be teaching it.
Yeah, absolutely. So we go through this very therapeutic meditative session with you, and you're more or less guiding us through that. But what's the point of that session? Like, what would you want to accomplish for that individual by the time the session's over?
Clarity. Just dreaming again. Just being able. Some people have turned off their possibility switch, and I want to create an environment where they can just slow down and listen to themselves, learn to trust themselves, listen to those voices that live inside, and turn the volume up. Because for some people, they're just faint little whispers. And we've been trained, I believe, in a lot of business environments to shut that down and get heady. Okay, we've got to focus on the goal. We've got to do this. It's got to hurt. We've got to grind it. And then we're quieting or shutting off our intuition, our truth, all these things that are gnawing at us that want to come up. So I just want to create an environment. I do create an environment for people to listen to themselves.
Good. So you say clarity, and I want to address two things. I want to address clarity first, and then two, I want to address that aspect of business, because this is a very good topic for us to have, is what role does this play in business, and then, you know, how do those things mix together? Because I think there's a lot of misconceptions about how that goes. But when you say clarity and helping them build clarity, clarity of what? I mean, what is clarity for most people?
Well, you know, we talk in Keller Williams or in life about the big why a lot. Mm-hmm. And people are like, I don't know what my why is. And then judge themselves and blame themselves. Or when we're going to sit down and do a business plan, okay, so what are your goals? And they might have a number of how much money they want to make that year. And then we work backwards through math. Well, how many listings, how many closings? And this is just an example. This is a real estate example. I could use this in any business. And a lot of times people aren't emotionally connected to that goal. Mm-hmm. Well, what do I even want this for? It's not about the money. Some people it is, and some people it's about the chase of being able to do that sense of accomplishment. For most of us, it's about something bigger. It's about something different. It's about funding this beautiful life. So being able to get that imagination flowing again so we could just throw it out there. And then from there, I mean, I can, if you're my full-time client, that gives me so much information to work with to help you on a day-to-day basis to be able to set smaller goals to get you there. But I also believe that you don't need, that's only a part of it. Mm-hmm. Once you throw that out there, and you've experienced this, once you throw it out there, it just starts happening, because there's so much, and that's when we start getting deeper into the law of vibration and your reticular activating system. And
there's certainly some deep components to this when you align yourself with why you're doing something. I know for me what it was is it was like, oh my gosh, by the time I ended that session and sat with it and wrote it down and then, you know, had gone through a little bit more of the process with you, it was like what I realized was I came out of that with a very, very clear blueprint of what I wanted my life to look like. Because I'd never really gotten to the point where I gave myself permission to sit down and say, what do I want?
That's what I love. I feel like it's a big permission slip.
Right.
To be able to say, you know what? What if you just got out of your head? And that's why I say, let's remove reality. Let's remove money and time just for now. You know, it sounds all la-la.
It'll
but just
be waiting for you at the end of the session.
Exactly.
Don't worry.
Yeah? Let's just dream and play like you're a little kid. That's why I love the piece of choosing your own transportation device. And it's so fun. People choose magic carpets. People choose Pegasus. I'm sure she won't mind me saying, I won't say your name. And one person chose like a pea pod through like a hamster tube. Another person wrote a sloth. Yeah. And it's just fun to let that imagination go. And these people, the person with the hamster tube is one of the top agents in all of Tempe. Mm-hmm. I mean, all these, you know, rainbow and butterflies and fairy tales are serious business.
They really are. They really are. Mine was a Jeep, and I'm going to very briefly go over my story because I skipped it last time.
I was going to bring that up.
on purpose, and I'll, everyone will kind of discover why. But I sat down and I had a red Jeep, a red CJ7, which, you know, connected me to childhood and happy, you know, the things that I liked about my childhood and the happiness that I got from the freedom of a Jeep. So I chose that and I launched from here and I flew that Jeep. You know, I had no agenda when I got it. I didn't know what I was going to be doing. I just sat down and went with your guidance and I flew that Jeep into the air. I don't know how that happens, but hey, like no boundaries in this. And I landed it in a place in Montana that I just love, that I've always loved. Through that experience, you know, without going through all the details in the interest of time, I found myself in front of a cabin. And that cabin had a little stream going through it. And I was standing in the stream and I was looking down and I was holding a little girl's hand. Now, mind you, I'm the kind of guy that for the last decade or even 15 years, I just really haven't been interested in having children. But I looked down at this little girl and, you know, it was a really interesting moment. We were both just barefoot standing in a shallow part of this creek. And the river was flowing. And I look back over my shoulder as I'm holding this girl's hand, and I look back at this cabin. And on the deck of that cabin, there is a little baby carriage, and there's a little baby boy in the baby carriage. Now, I'm going to highlight this section. There were some other business things as well. There were other business things in there as well, and those things have absolutely paralleled this story in their own way. But if you fast forward to today, a very interesting thing happened to me. Last summer, a year ago, I was in Montana and two of my friends have little girls, right around the ages of 5 or 6 years old. And, you know, we just had a blast. We were camping and we did the fire pit and we were doing, you know, just the kid fun stuff. And these two little girls just inspired me so much. I was just so happy to be around them. That was new for me, but I was very happy. They made my heart feel full. And I remember coming back from Montana, and my wife's always been, you know, like, you know, she's always nudging me along, like most of our better halves do. And I said, you know, I think something switched in me. You know, I think I have this great desire to be a dad. And I hadn't experienced that before. But I was, you know, when you fast forward to today, my wife and I are expecting a son on May 20th, and we skipped over this in our first podcast because we just found out we were pregnant at that time. And
you told me that night.
and I kept it pretty tight. But when I go back and I look at that, because you did a visual painting of my experience that included that, you know, those things amongst some other business things, and I go back and I look at it now and I go, oh my goodness, I walked into that session with you with none of that in my head. I wasn't focused on any of it. Most of it I didn't know existed inside of me. And when I go back and look at it last night in preparation for doing this podcast for you today, I look at it and I go, holy crap, this is all my reality now. I'm due for another session. Like I got to create this new blueprint. And it was like, it's just so empowering to go through that and very emotional. But I had a blueprint for the first time in my life and I gave myself permission to have it. And it was an absolutely wonderful experience because it opened me up to areas of my life that I was not paying attention to or not valuing, or I was getting caught up in the business ego where everything's about business and money and progress and growth. And I forgot to go, no, there's a reason that you are doing business and money and growth and you're grinding. It's got to be attached to something else or it's empty.
Yeah.
And this was a catalyst for me to really get to know my why at a much, much deeper level. And that blueprint was so valuable. Thank you for that.
I'm so grateful.
So we went from that and you painted my experience. Does that bring us to here, to all these paintings?
Well, that was magic marker. And later on, okay, I'm still looking at the correlation between this and that, and I know that there is, because what I'm starting to find is when somebody orders something or if I'm thinking about somebody, I start feeling them when I'm painting. So back when I, with my coach, who I went to Allison Crowe's home a few years ago and numerous times, that she does these intuitive painting retreats where we're coaching and we're painting and where the focus is not being attached to what it looks like.
Right.
Not forcing an outcome. and just letting it happen. And I just loved it so much. And then I would wait another year until she had another event before I painted again. And it was gnawing in me. And it's funny because my older daughter, Leah, is just an exceptional artist. And I'm always like, Leah, when are you going to paint more? You know, why don't you do this? Why don't you? And it's like, okay, how many fingers are pointing back at me? Mm-hmm. I'm the one who wants to paint. I'm the one who wants to create. And I was had this mindset, well, I'm not trained. I'm not a real artist. I don't know perspective. I literally can't even see a straight line. My perceptional skills are just off that way. And I just love doing it at Allison's house. And it was just a metaphor for life. And she would walk around and she would coach all of us while we're doing it and say, okay, you know, what are you feeling right now? What kind of judgment are you laying on yourself right now? What kind of like self-talk are you doing right now? And recognizing how we do that in life all the time. So for me, being on the canvas is a complete metaphor for life. And as a coach, I want to get more people on the canvas to see that. So anyway, these paintings really came, I think all of them came from piles of mistakes. They were layers and layers of stuff. There's always a point in one of them that I'm like, I hate this. I suck. You know, this, look at this mistake. And I would have Allison in my mind coming by me and being like, okay, look at mine. Look at the texture in mine. Look at the layers of shit that I have under this and all the beautiful stuff that, do you like this? I'm like, oh, yeah, it's gorgeous. You know, look at that. So, and I remember that first one that turned so muddy and it was so ugly. And I just was like, I got to just start over. And that turned into this gorgeous elephant that I love. It's one of my favorite paintings.
I've seen that one.
And we played on that for 3 days. Then when I made you one, I knew lion was your spirit animal. And I had layers and layers and layers of stuff under that. And then I just started channeling you. I know you're on this quest. You've been on this quest for being more vulnerable and how much courage that took. So the lion who exudes courage, and I named it Courageous Vulnerability. Mm-hmm. And that came out like, I just looked back. I said, oh, my God. I think I love this. I think it's done. Yeah. And it started just from making a ton of mistakes, which is just life. It's and then loving them, appreciating the mistakes. Get it, and I'm not there. This is a practice. I mean, I'm
practicing. There,
yeah.
Right? Yeah.
And then so can I go into the story about what that even evolved into after I gave you that?
Sure, absolutely. I want to mention that you wrote a beautiful message on the back of that painting and gave it to me, and that will be hanging in the bedroom of our baby boy going forward. So I value this stuff because it's made a big impact on me. And we'll get to the whole business angle of this. So if you're listening and you're thinking, you know, if you're doing the eye rolling and the this is kind of airy-fairy and, oh my gosh, this is for, you know, hippies or liberals or whatever, like, hey, listen, like, those judgments are super normal, right? That's just a super normal way of how we've constructed society today. But I would challenge you to just open yourself up to the conversation a little bit and allow yourself to consider it. You don't have to do it, but allow yourself to consider it for a minute.
And let me be clear, too, that these retreats that I went on, I paid a lot of money to go there. So it's a smart business plan that my coach Allison Crow has, and I invested in myself too. So that this is an entire education in my inner work. You know, she was saying something the other day when we were talking about money, and when people say, oh, you know, I just don't have the money, I have money issues, and she said, you know, and I don't know if she quoted this or it's from somebody else, I'm going to give her credit right now. She said, oh, honey, it's not, you don't have a money problem. You're just blaming your inner work problem on the money. Mm. So when you talk about the correlation between having a financially stable life and this inner work, if I have a money issue, I know I get to go inside.
Yeah, I think it goes beyond just even having a financially stable life, but having a financially enriching life.
Yes.
These are things people pay attention to. We don't talk about them enough, but these are things in one shape or another that people focus on at the highest levels of business or mm-hmm. or success in any, even in sports and athletes and you know, artists. Like, everybody is engaging themselves at this level, this inner work, this, you know, reflection, so to speak, about why they do the things they do, what they want to change. We talk a lot about habits and rituals creating the results that you currently have in your life. This is a heck of a catalyst to start to address those things and what might need to change, what habits and rituals might need to be different to create different results in your life. And when you're clear on those and you have a blueprint for them, then at least you have a roadmap. Like, you know where you're going for the first time. For me, it felt like I knew where I was going for the first time. I knew why the heck I was getting up in the morning and taking the risks that I do in business and working as hard as I do and dealing with the failure and the rejection and the fear. It makes it a heck of a lot easier to deal with all of those things when you know where you're going and why you're going there.
And when you create a culture of rejuvenation and rest and play. One of the things I noticed about you since we did that was you started going hiking more. You started getting up into the mountains more. You were going on longer trips too. And who knows if the chicken or the egg came first as far as were you making more money and then you felt comfortable doing that? I think it's the opposite. I know when I'm on the canvas and I'm in my zone, great things happen business-wise. This has become a business. Talk about capitalism. This has become a business, too. It just, like, happened because I was in my zone loving it so much and really changing my relationship with rejection, which set me up to really handle some circumstances that could have been devastating. Mm-hmm. So that's fun.
What a great thing to point out too, because rejection is such a part of business. And we talk about rejection from a business perspective, but rejection exists everywhere. It exists in art and acceptance, in relationships, and like it is a part, it has woven itself into the fabric of our lives in every aspect that we could imagine. And I know on this podcast and when I teach, I speak to rejection as, you know, from a business lens. But this is important because you're doing something you love and you're painting and you're really in this place, for the most part, like, how do we do what we love? How do we make a hobby a job? You know, all of those things everybody's trying to, like, happiness, you're happy doing it. But it just because you're happy doing it doesn't mean that you don't face that rejection. And even, like, attacks, you know.
Full-on attacks.
I saw it. You know, I witnessed it. I watched you go through it, and I just thought to myself, wow. But were you stronger coming off the other side of that?
Yeah, and while I was in it, because of all the inner work that I had done, mm-hmm. while I was in it, it was a whole different experience. I'm not saying it didn't sting and I didn't want to say certain things and I was coming up with my witty comebacks, and I'm not saying that I didn't revert back to when I was in eighth grade in New York and wanted to kick her ass, you know? Right. I mean, that all happened too. And the interesting part is the day before some background.
Sure, if you'd like.
So after I finished your painting, spontaneously, the Facebook, the crawlers
the trolls.
IA, in artificial intelligence, AI. Somehow this ad popped up to sign up for this art battle. And I'm like, art battle? Sounds like fun. And I'm like, I'm not like a real artist, you know, even though I would tell myself, yes, you are. You know, it doesn't have to look a certain way. And I still, my belief really wasn't there. But anyway, something just came over me. It was not from my head. And I just started signing up for it on my phone. And I used your painting as my submission. I'm like, oh, I'm so proud of myself. I at least submitted it. Then I got accepted. I'm like, oh, what the heck did I sign up for anyway? And I started reading about it and looking at all the other artists. And I was like, oh, my gosh, these are, like, serious artists. Like, oh, my God, what did I do? And I'm so excited I get to be in the same room with these people that I admire their work so much. And I put these people, specific people, on this pedestal because their art was so incredible. I was just like, God, how did they do that? So anyway, we had this. It was just a fun event. It was not applying for Juilliard. It was just in a strip mall bar. It's a powerful, powerful opportunity. It's super fun. It's a fundraiser. The goal was to invite a ton of friends, have a good time, throw down some paint, encourage people, encourage other artists. So there was two groups of six that would compete. The winners of those two would compete in a final round of four people. And it was, again, all in fun. Invite your friends, and it's the audience that votes. Well, I ended up winning. And I invited a ton of friends, totally out of my comfort zone, to ask for support. Mm-hmm. So that was another practice of self-love and stretching myself. So I just said, hey, guys, I didn't ask for the vote. I just said, come out and play, support me. And definitely had a lot of friends. And a lot of encouragement from the other artists for the most part. So that's where I want to keep my focus, although I do want to tell the story because it's important. Next day, 2 days later, I ended up getting a really, really bad stomach issue that lasted a while. So I was already feeling just a lot of pain in my stomach. And then I got this email from one of the artists, the woman who I revered the most because I saw her work and her website and I thought she was incredible. The most scathing, vicious email that literally took every limiting belief and self-doubt that I had before I went in there, and it was on there, and then some. I mean, made fun of my family, my clothing, my friends, my job. I mean, it was just the meanest.
It was brutal.
Scathing email, just ripping apart my work and my integrity and that I cheated and all that kind of stuff. So it was such a beautiful, first of all, I'm glad it happened to me and not somebody who hadn't been doing this inner work, because that could send some people into suicide. And that was concerning to me because art is such a vulnerable thing. And you know, putting yourself out there like that. Again, I've done so much inner work. Thank you, all of my coaches and friends and family, for all the work that I've done, because I was really able to look inside, know that I was in integrity, and focus on the encouragers, focus on myself being an encourager and being like, all right, this is fine. And then I did it again. I did another art battle, and then I turned it into a business, and I didn't even intend to. I just started playing and making mistakes and almost looking for the rejection, looking for the opportunities to be okay with what I used to call mistakes. My friend Lisette's daughter, Ayana, said, one day I was getting her on the canvas and we were playing, and I'm like, Ayana, there's no mistakes. Just go have fun with it. And she said, oh, let's do an art gallery called the Mistake Gallery where there's no mistakes. And I'm like, how genius if we could look at our life that way.
Oh, man. Yeah. I want to point out part of this, because I think a lot of people who are listening, whether it's art or business or any other aspect of life, society has a tendency to operate it the way that this happened with great consistency. You lean into something that makes you very happy. You're vulnerable. You're pressing yourself out of your comfort zone. You're getting around other artists who you felt were much further along with you, right? And you know, one of my mentors, Michael Mayer, calls it punching up or meeting up. Like, you know, if you really want to be better or do better or grow, it's important that you put yourself in an environment that's challenging around other people that might know more than you, right? And in every business book or guru book on the planet will always tell you, like, try not to be the smartest person in the room or the best person in the room. Like, try to always be in a room of people who are better than you, because that's how you grow. And that's what I see you do right here, is you were doing something that makes you very, very happy. You leaned into a very, very uncomfortable situation, a situation that most people would have avoided simply to avoid the stress of it or the anxiety of being vulnerable in that situation. And you know, I can speak to that directly.
Yes.
I mean, that's a challenge I've always, always had. And then you go into it, which is most of the trouble, is just getting there and doing it and ripping the Band-Aid off and making it happen. And that usually is, you know, for half of people, that's where it will end, and it'll be a sense of relief. And I'm sure you felt that sense of relief for a moment, and then the victimhood of that email, the rejection of that email comes in such a scathing way. And you are right. I would have broken in that moment. I probably would have just went, phew, man, that was brutal. The shame, I would have felt guilt. I would have let that project onto me at a time in my life. Now, absolutely yeah. not. But at a time in my life, I would have let somebody else rejection of me and them, you know, saying those scathing things. I would have let that one person determine my journey, as opposed to going, this isn't their journey.
Yes.
This is my journey. This is what I decided I wanted to do because it makes me happy.
Hence being so focused on self-love.
Yeah.
And what that really can do. I mean, it sounds, oh, you just got to love yourself. No, you really got to love yourself. And it's completely correlated to finances. It's completely correlated to business and marriage and raising children. And it's a practice. It's a daily inner practice. And I'm so honored that I chose to take the leap to make that my full-time business.
Yeah, I'm really happy that you did that too. I want to say that, you know, for most people, and I've experienced this a great deal in the last 6 months, I think even in my life, as I have, you know, taken on new opportunities and journeys, and I've committed to the things that I want to accomplish as a person. When you want to do those things, the things that make you happy, you're not going to make everybody else happy on that journey towards your happiness.
Ooh, good.
And for vulnerable people, for people who love and care about others, that can be the most difficult part of
yeah.
this. I recognized a lot of areas that I was holding myself back and the people that trusted me to lead our businesses. I've recognized multiple areas recently where I have held us back because of weird loyalties or a desire not to hurt other people's feelings.
People-pleasing.
Yeah, people-pleasing. And at the end of the day, I would go home and I would be like, yeah, but I want to accomplish so much more. I want to be involved so much more. There's so much more I feel like I have to give. And it's really difficult to consider how many people are going to maybe suffer because of those decisions, or maybe just not like those decisions, or maybe feel rejected by you because you made those decisions when it has absolutely nothing to do with them. And that for me as a person who cares deeply about others is a very difficult thing for me to deal with on my own path to happiness.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of people feel that way.
Yeah.
So let's tie this to business, because I want to go down a little bit of a path here on what role this plays in business. And one of the things that you and I spoke about before the podcast started was, it's very important that we talk about, this cannot be used as a crutch. Self-work, inner work, what you do here with Masterpiece University can attract.
Oh, I like the way you upgraded it to a university.
You like that? Masterpiece Coaching and Consulting.
I'll take
I did say university.
That
feels right, doesn't
yeah.
it? That just kind of rolled off the tongue.
Ooh, a little bit more possibility thinking there.
Yeah, so I'll say it and then you elaborate on it. I don't know how common this is, but I do see it happen often with people. I wouldn't say that it's the majority of the time. It's certainly not more often than not, but it does happen. People will go down this journey of self-work, self-discovery, and there's a lot of self-love involved. And oftentimes what they can do is use this as a crutch to not work in other areas of their life.
I'm finding myself.
I'm
so
finding
see
myself.
You later.
Yeah,
I'm going to leave my children and my family because yeah. I want to go find myself.
Yeah, or even
the problem is you take yourself with you when you go.
There you go. So it's that, but it's also in business. Like you have a job to do, or you might be building a business, or if you're an agent or something else, is like you got to get up and you have to do the hard work, the hard work that's involved in that business. And oftentimes you can get down this path a little bit and go, no, I'm good. This inner work is going to fix me. I'm going to trust the process and it's going to fix me. It's not going to fix your income. It's going to help you do the work that fixes your income. But it's not going to just fix the income.
If you're only doing that.
If you're only
yeah.
doing that. Yeah.
And I think a lot of it, I mean, and please don't think that I don't condone and support taking time to rest and rejuvenate and play and do some inner work. I 100%. But if that continues to the point where it's dysfunctionally hurting your business, there's other issues that want to be addressed at that, you know, that goes a little bit deeper. And I really believe that a lot of people get into that spiral because they don't implement and schedule that rest, rejuvenation, and play in their work. And I really believe that it's part of your business plan. Napping can be part of your business plan. Playing, I mean, I'm at the point right now, truthfully, and I'm not saying it's always like this, that I've learned to manage my thoughts enough and my energy for the most part. I mean, I've had, especially recently, I've had some major ebbs from constant flow. And but I don't even know the difference between play and work sometimes, because it just goes hand in hand, because I'm managing my thoughts. And that's because I'm doing something I love. Not everybody has that luxury right now. Mm-hmm. So for those people that are really in that grinding kind of mode, I suggest, first of all, stop grinding. Just be joyfully focused instead of hard work.
Yeah.
And that's thought management. But also to make sure that you're scheduling, going under your covers and hiding if you need to, going for walks, going to the beach, taking naps, whatever that is, schedule that in. And if you don't schedule it and you feel hit hard and you get that burnout, love yourself through it. I think the other tendency that I see in society and my own clients, myself often, is judging myself when I get too tired to do something, or if I just don't want to do it, or if I'm getting cranky, instead of loving and honoring that. Oh, okay, this is just an ebb that I'm having in my flow. This is the contraction, especially after you're playing really big.
Yeah. Tyler was on the podcast a couple weeks ago, and he references like the seasonality of life. Like you're always in a season, and you know, we talk about grinding or working hard. Like a lot of people don't realize that that doesn't mean that it's permanent, but you might need to do that to reach, you know, the next place. You know, you got to use 80% of your rocket fuel to get to space, but only 20% to stay there. Most people don't realize, like, you want to get to that place, it's going to take some work, and it's going to take rejection
focus.
And focus, and it's going to, like, it's not going to go perfectly.
And it's going to be getting out of balance, which is okay.
Yeah.
You know, we talk about that a lot in coaching, and that there is no such thing as balance. So let's just be okay with that. I remember reading that in the Millionaire Real Estate Agent book, like, there's no such thing as balance. Life is a continuation of counterbalance. And I was like, phew. It's just, again, that pressure to be perfect. Like, oh, I've got to have all aspects of my life in perfect balance. Well, when you want to create anything extraordinary, it may take being completely focused on that for a while.
Yeah.
As long as you can check in and say, okay, well, what am I hurting over here? And then bring it back over.
Yeah. I think too many people, especially entrepreneurs, business people, they want balance to look like their peers' balance, which is, you know, I go to work at 9, I have an hour lunch, I'm off at 5, I don't take my work home with me at night, I don't work weekends, you know, that, like, that's how they view balance. And that version of balance is a lie.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's an industrial complex that was built into society that gives us permission that this is what your definition of balance should be. But when you want more out of your life, when you want to create exceptional things, you want to build and you want to grow, and you do want to be your own boss and control your own schedule, the path to get there will mean that you're out of balance. You're going to do the things that other people are unwilling or unable to do so that you can live the life that they are unwilling or unable to live. And that's going to take an immense amount of work. It's going to take developing a relationship with failure and rejection. And it's most likely going to take you getting some coaching or learning about yourself. And that's going to be important. I love this because I don't think enough people realize that really, really successful people have all kinds of coaches in their life,
mm-hmm.
right? They might, like for me, I've got a business coach. I consider you my, like, visualization coach, my self-love coach. Like, when I'm starting to get burned out or my confidence is starting to slip or whatever, like, I need to address that, because that's freaking normal, man. That is normal for everybody in this business. There's an ebb and flow to your confidence. And when you're feeling that confidence and you're vibing on it and you're creating results in your life, that's awesome. But it's impermanent, right? There's a flow to it. You're going to be in and out of that. And you have to be willing to work on yourself to understand that when you're out of it or when you're coming out of it, you recognize the seasonality of that and that it's very, very normal. Yeah. And you start to work to course correct, right? So that's an important part. This is another piece. Executive therapists exist. And you don't really know or hear much about this. But these are the most crazy workaholic type of people. You know, think Wall Street CEOs. Oh my gosh, you know, we bring that up on a podcast like this. Yeah, think about those types of people. You know how much money and that they invest in executive therapists to keep their vulnerabilities in check, to keep their confidence high? They're investing in themselves to keep their confidence high. Like, that exists. I don't think people know that these very, very talented, very successful people operate that way. They understand that it exists. They understand the role that lack of confidence, the ebb and flow, the seasonality of confidence can play, and they address it. They address it by paying someone to help them see it, to help them work through it. And what I fear that we do is we take a look at something like this and we see it as a weakness. Right? Especially men. Yeah. Like men go through this a lot. They look at this conversation or this kind of practice and they go, that's for sissies or whatever, you know, weird masculinity thing that we want to put on here. Not knowing that the very people that they idolize in business likely lean into this exponentially more than they could ever even understand.
Yeah.
Can you speak to that? Like, level people utilize this work.
Yeah. I mean, I see it firsthand. Well, for myself, first of all, I always have a coach, and all the coaches I know have coaches, and I've been around some very, very high level coaches that have coaches. And even just in our office, even just having my little safe haven for people to just come in, and I just need a moment. I just need to regroup. I need to see myself from a different angle. Help me with the blind spots, or can I just vent? It's pretty much all day long. If I was there every day, it would be like that day.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I'm seeing a big wave. And again, that's from my lens because I'm in that world right now and have been for a long time. I'm seeing a big wave over the planet where people are leaning into this. And it's funny because I'm almost seeing like a circle because it's almost getting easy to be vulnerable and talk about what you suck at and talk about what your fears are. Mm-hmm. So what I do, I start every class like this and I do it in my room, is I help people. I think it's even more vulnerable to talk about what you rule at, what you're awesome at, and get up and say it.
Accept
your greatness. It's the difference between being an arrogant asshole and being confident. Mm-hmm. And that, again, is directly correlated to business. When we can have a confident servant leadership type of way we operate, we're leading, as realtors, we're leading people into the biggest decision of their life. Being self-deprecating and thinking that that's humility and being humble, it's not the same thing. Mm-hmm. It's not the same thing. So I'm going to challenge everyone who's listening to this right now to really check in with their self-talk and truly, truly, even if you're kidding, even if you think you're being you're telling jokes and you're making self-deprecating comments, pay attention to that, because our body, if there's a bold law, our cells eavesdrop on our thoughts, and our body pays attention to our thoughts. And I believe that we can get ourselves very sick from the self-talk. So practicing loving yourself, practicing. I mean, I know, again, we're back into this airy-fairy stuff.
Go for it, though.
Affirmations become realities.
Yeah. One of my classes that I teach, there's a portion of that we go over where I want to do a mindset check. I want people to accept the responsibility for the way that they're thinking. And absolutely not because I think perfectly. I just understand that when I'm not, I know that that can be I know that that's not serving my overall mission in life.
Yeah.
And owning the responsibility of your thoughts is an important aspect of growing, because what you focus on really does expand. It's not just a quote that you flip by on Instagram or from a book. Yes. How you being healthy is not just whether or not your body is healthy. It is your mind healthy? Do you think in a healthy way? Right? Or are you just a victim all the time? Are you a victim of circumstance constantly? It starts with owning that, no matter where you are in your life. And listen, some people have circumstances that absolutely do affect their situation more than others. Sure. But how you you're thinking your way out of that stuff most of the time.
Yeah.
And it's going to directly tie to your happiness. Yeah. If you're constantly negatively thinking and you're a victim or you're self-deprecating and all of that, you're likely not a very happy person either.
Yeah. And practicing, that's why in the classroom, I'll have everybody, you know, introduce themselves. We'll ask a silly question to break the ice. And then I'm stand up and say the full sentence. I rock at whatever that is. So it's practice. It's feeling it in the body and feeling how uncomfortable it is. So it brings up a lot of conversation in the classroom right then and there. A lot of people come in, they're like, I thought I was taking a real estate class. What's going on here? It's impactful, and it's always correlated to business. Always. I said, trust me, there's always a method to my madness. What we're doing in here is going to help you out there. Mm-hmm. And it's really what you're doing in here that's going to help you out there when you're a leader.
Yeah.
And if you're a realtor, you're a leader if you're a good realtor, unless you're some, like you would say, one of those other people with licenses. I know there was something that you had said earlier, too, about comparing to people with a regular job. And that's just another example of us judging our business insides by somebody else's business outsides. Mm-hmm. I know my parents both had jobs, paying jobs. They didn't leave it in the office. They talked about it at the dinner table all the time. They loved their work. They were very, very passionate about it. And it really never ended. They were always passionate about it, always thinking about their clients and things that were going on politically. And I was a teacher for years. I certainly didn't leave that in the classroom either. So mm-hmm. Being that brings us to the whole concept of judging our insides by other people's outsides. It's just another self-love opportunity.
I agree. I also think there's a subsection of those people there that they really just don't want to work. There's an entitlement. Mm-hmm. They want all the things that life has to give them, but
they
don't
make excuses.
But they don't really want to work for them. So their words and their actions are not in synergy with, you know, what their goals are, and therefore, you know, they're not reaching their goals.
They're not emotionally healthy enough. Yeah. They don't have the tools yet. They haven't done the inner work yet.
Yeah. And I think that's maybe what I wanted to point out here is this kind of work can sometimes have a negative effect on them because it almost gives them permission to not want to work. And then they wonder, like, listen, if you want lots of money or you want the house or you want the car or you want all these material possessions and then you're doing this, like, you're going to have to work for those. That's going to take
massive
action. Cut
it out and call 20 people right now and tell me about your problems later. Sometimes we've got to go that way.
And that's what I want to point out is, like, this working in synergy with your efforts and your actions in business, they are very complementary when they're worked together. But oftentimes people will, and I do this a lot on the other side. I get way too down the work side. I lean way, my pendulum swings way over to work, and I forget about this part. And then I feel myself get out of balance. And then I'm texting you going, I'm out of balance, right? Like, this is, like, I got to get back in balance. And it's the same for the people on the other side. The pendulum swings way over to the self-love and inner work part, and it gives them permission not to, like, take action and do the things necessary to change the result that they likely need to change, which is why they got with you in the first place, right? Like, I'm living paycheck to paycheck. My business isn't going well. I'm at a low confidence stage, right? Like, you're going to have to tie some of this to fix some of that. So this needs to be worked cohesively together.
You know, and that's why I'm not going to be a business coach without the life piece, and I'm not going to be a life coach without the business piece. There's definitely, I mean, I'm sure that there's people who are retired that would like some of this work too. And it still goes hand in hand. I mean,
it does.
Yeah, there's been some schools of taught, not thought, of just let's focus on the business. What were your numbers? How'd you do? Blah, blah, blah. 20 minutes, out the door, next.
Right.
And that can work. And that's not how I want to roll, though. It can work to a certain extent. And I want to bring the whole person into it. And it takes time. It takes time to dig into somebody's dreams and help them really. I know the dreams, it's more than that. It's just beyond dreams. It's what do you really want to create? What life, this life that you're in right now, whether there's more lives or not, that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about this life. What do you want to create in this life without it just passing you by?
And that can be a dream. I think we get to the point where we've talked about dreams as if automatically it's a dream, therefore it's unachievable. That's not true.
Yeah.
But I feel like that's how we function in society right now, that dreams by nature are unachievable. Well, I have some dreams and I'm in the middle of actually achieving them. And when I verbalized them, they sounded like crazy talk. It really did. Even to me in the moment while the words were coming out of my mouth, I was just like, okay, well, I'll just go along with Steph here. Okay, I want this and I want this. And I started going, wait a minute, I really do want that. wait a minute, there could be a path for me to have that.
Yeah.
You know, I come from a different environment, a very small town, Montana. Like I'm a simple guy by nature. It doesn't take much to make me happy. And I'll tell you this, money certainly has not played a role in my happiness. And when I was younger, I thought for sure 100% that was going to just fix all of my problems. That does not. I, by sitting with you, got to sit and realize what my dreams were, what my real human dreams were, and get clear on those and have a blueprint for them, and then actually build a business and a life strategy to attain them. And, you know, one of the things...
money comes in.
Yeah. My wife and I bought a 20-acre parcel in Montana last year in the exact area that I landed my little magic flying Jeep in that thing. Like... I gotta tell you, from where I came from and how I grew up, that did not enter my mind as like, oh yeah, I'll achieve that. That was an unachievable dream for me. And I know a lot of you people, exactly. It happened way
really
faster than I anticipated. So I went from this is an unachievable dream to I have this. In a very, very short period of time.
You're an effing magician if you let yourself be.
Right?
Just, that's all there is to it. That's
my
where
goodness.
The magic happens.
And, yeah.
And I just believe, I believe in magic.
Yeah.
Plain and simple. Yes, you get to connect with people and you get to learn how to write a contract. You get to, whatever your business is, you want to be great at it.
Yeah.
You want to learn it. And you can also sprinkle the magic into it.
Yeah, I believe in magic too. My definition of it is a little bit different maybe in that I believe the magic of what we can accomplish if only we get in alignment with what it is that we want.
Oh, yeah.
When we
That's
know
when
what it is
happens.
That we want, when we think the right way to achieve it, when we take the actions that help us achieve it, and when we put ourselves in the environment around the right people, surrounding yourself with the right people, challenging yourself by being in other environments, all of that is magic to me because we're in control of it if we only want to accept that responsibility. But it does dress itself up as magic, right?
Yeah. Like,
because
you're
in that
much
control.
Yeah. And then being able to play in what we're not in control of and surrender there too, which is also part of the magic. You're right. That ingredients and then watching it exponentially turn into something mind-blowing. Like you, even when you and I would talk since that day, I'd be like, how much closer are you getting to that property? And you're like, oh, no, I need money first. I need money first.
And money.
I said, well, what if it maybe could happen without money? Or maybe the money will show up in a different way? Or maybe, you know, who knows? Maybe it doesn't have to look the way you think it's supposed to look.
Mm-hmm.
And
it ended up not looking the way I thought it was supposed to look.
So funny.
And the end result was the same.
Yes. Yeah. And I think that's happens a lot. That's why I love reflection and coaching because, I'm not getting there. I'm not doing this. So I have people say, like, all right, let's take a little while. Let's just take about a half an hour and let's reflect on what you did create over the, and all of a sudden, boom, 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 oh, that actually is happening. I just didn't realize I'm actually doing that.
Because I'm not across the finish line yet, right?
I thought it was supposed to look this way. Well, what, you're still doing it. It's still, I have a friend that who did his, and he was going to coach people, and he was going to have these groups, and he had this whole idea of doing it in a certain business, and he was really struggling in that business himself. So it was just a way pie in the sky, far-fetched thing. And even I was thinking that, to be honest with you. And it took me a long time to get his drawing to him. And all of a sudden, we sat down months later, and oh my gosh, you're doing this. It was in a different arena, though. It was through a church. It was through different kind of groups. He had been named the leader of all of these groups and healing people and serving people. So the essence was all what he had put out there. It just was dressed up in a different package. It was exactly what he had put down and what he had. It was unbelievable, even to me, to see how that unfolded. So I recommend to often do reflections on your greatness, on what you are accomplishing, not on what you're not. Like what we talked about a moment, what you focus on grows and grows and grows. So what do we want to grow? Mm-hmm. When I got the attack from those women, I could have perseverated on that. And I definitely felt it in my body. And then my thoughts, I chose, I was very conscious of it. It was, I put my work to work. And I said, okay, what do I want to grow? What do I want to focus on? And I focused on all of my friends who came out of everywhere, all over the place, and blocked that night to come out and love on me and support me. I focused on the encouragement from my mother, my kids, myself. I'm so proud. What if I just focus on how proud of myself I am? What if I focus on the money that was raised for the charity and just the story in and of itself of breaking through all this? And so I went back to the next art battle a week or a month later and spoke on stage to the other artists. I didn't participate in that one. But I didn't tell the story because I wanted to focus on something that I wanted to grow. Mm-hmm. And what did I want to grow? I wanted encouragement in the art community. So I stood on stage and I just complimented everybody on encouraging each other, even before they were getting ready to encourage each other. I just set that intention that we are all here to encourage each other, and that's what we're going to do in this community. And then I reached out to all the other artists that I competed against on that and loved on them, and actually created a few venues for us to get together and create. So again, what you focus on grows.
You just said like a completely golden nugget in there, in that you put the work to work. And I love that.
So tell me what I just said.
I love that you just said, I put the work to work. You've been doing inner work, right? Mm. You've been doing the self work, and then you were presented with something
beautiful
that challenged that, right?
Yes.
And I think that it's very important by doing the work that you're suggesting, this inner work, this self-love, it is not setting you up so that you live a life in the absence of rejection and challenge and discomfort. It is setting you up so that when that discomfort and that rejection happens, you now have the tools to deal with it in a positive way.
And a great place to practice that is traffic.
Oh, so I'm failing. I thought I was doing pretty good until you said that. Now I know that I've got a lot of work left.
I've become known. Those of you who are watching who know my little shtick with traffic, I am like, and people make fun of me all the time about it, and people even text me, I'm enjoying traffic right now, Steph. You know, and I'm just like, what if you just, I mean, think about it. It's such a perfect example of choosing to not be a victim to circumstance. It's like, what if you just chose to love it? There's nothing you can do about it. Until we all have a flying Jeep, we're going to be sitting in traffic when there's traffic. And what if we just had fun with it? And you could really have a lot of fun with it. There's a lot of fun you can have with traffic. You could listen to podcasts like The Authentic Agent. You could listen to books. You could play music. It was funny because when I was on this shtick about loving traffic, after I decided to love it, I got some, you know, how, again, the artificial intelligence just knows what you're thinking sometimes, too. And at this YouTube video came across. I've shown it to you before with TJ Smith, Sing Along in Traffic. So when I teach when I teach the Six Perspectives class, I ask everybody, what do you think about traffic? And this is relevant to what we're talking about with thought management, which is self-love. So if you're, just stay with me here. So like, what do you think about traffic? What comes to your mind when you think about traffic? And people are like, accidents, stress, being late, you know, all those kind of things. And then I play the TJ Smith video where he's singing Fill Me Up Buttercup on the 101 in LA where everybody's hating life, and they're singing, they're dancing, and everyone, you can't not smile when you hear Fill Me Up Buttercup, you know. It's just one of those moments, and it just transforms people's energy. So I'm like, you know, what if we just chose into looking at every circumstance is a choice on how we want to think about that circumstance. How do we want to feel about it? So if we change our thoughts, we can change our feelings, which then change our results.
Yeah. I am literally the worst version of myself in traffic. So I've heard you say this before, and I needed to hear it again.
That'll be the next podcast. In traffic while we're singing to people.
Oh, my goodness. But I think you're spot on. Traffic is, you know, especially if you live in areas with really crazy traffic, it is one of those areas where every single individual on that highway believes that everybody else is creating their situation.
Oh my gosh. It's almost like a caricaturization. When I'm in the car with one of my friends, all right, I won't say her name right now. It's a characterization of just the comments and the vulgarity that comes out of her mouth about how stupid everybody else is. Mm-hmm. It's interesting. It's interesting how people have as a society given ourselves permission to become a terrible person.
when we go
behind the wheel. But we think it's okay to give somebody the finger and scream and yell at people. The only reason why a lot of people aren't doing that is because they're afraid they're going to get shot now. It's like, really? Like, what if we just... my friend Carly, who's one of my clients and a dear, dear friend, I did her future self, and that started manifesting. The crazy pie in the sky thing started manifesting in 45 days. But we've been talking about me getting a bus, a masterpiece bus, that so in traffic it can open up the stop sign. This is stop in the name of love and play music and just bless people in traffic. Okay,
what a great analogy though that traffic brings to the table for people to realize their own victimhood. And I'm reflecting on it very, very much right now because I do believe that I am the worst version of myself in traffic. The stuff that comes out of my mouth is just, who was that?
And the thing is that it's not good, bad, right, or wrong. If we want to feel like that, we are entitled to feel like that. You know, I've had friends say to me, come on, Steph, enough with this positive shit. You know, it's traffic. Yeah. You have a right to feel bad. Or like, come on, Steph, you know, look what your, you know, ex-husband
get
did.
Your
or whatever.
Head,
you
get
know,
your
you,
head out
you
of
have,
the clouds.
Yeah, you have a right to be mad. I'm not disputing my validity in being stressed or anything like that. And I'm not saying I've mastered this by any stretch of the imagination. And I'm kind of kidding.
It is by nature a stressful situation.
If, depending on what thought you put on it, you've got to label it to be that, or else it isn't.
You got to put your work to work.
Well, coming here this morning, I started getting a little bit of a because I wanted to make sure I was on time. And I was in a lot of traffic that first didn't tell me on my GPS. And then I just didn't pay attention to my GPS because I was on the phone. So I didn't take the route. So I did start feeling that anxiety starting to come up. And then I remembered, oh, this isn't going to do. You know, so I could feel myself telling myself to really rewire my nervous system in that moment. So I'm not saying I love traffic. I'm kind
of
kidding.
Not.
And I could if I want to. And even if I'm valid to hate it, do I want to be miserable or not? Do I want my nervous system to be heightened and feel that tightness in my body? No. So what can I do? What story can I tell myself to shift my nervous system? Sometimes it's breathing. Sometimes it's telling myself a new story. And traffic is a great place to practice that.
Right. 70 minutes have gone by. Like a little bit of a time warp in here. Can you believe that?
No.
What are we taking away from today? I know for me, it's, you know, if you want something to change in your life, if you want a different result, and we talk about habits and rituals creating the results that you have in your life all the time. But I don't think a lot of people really understand, like, is just creating a different habit or ritual going to get you there? I think that it starts with how you think. And you set your mind to something first. You make a decision, you know, in your head, and you choose to commit to that or think a specific way or to value a new habit or new ritual because of the result that it's going to take. So my big takeaway today is that I have a responsibility to take care of my thoughts, mm-hmm. take care of the way that I think, the same way I have a responsibility to take care of my body and make sure that it's healthy. The same way that I have a responsibility to take care of my family. I have a responsibility.
And taking care of your body and your family starts with you loving yourself and practicing that self-love, loving what is instead of wanting to change it. When you love what is and instead of want, I mean, I'm not saying don't have goals. I'm saying when you're in that moment, traffic, for example, or something frustrating, to be able to be like, okay, what if this is just part of my journey, part of my opportunity, and you can literally transform your nervous system into loving yourself in that moment, to be totally present, and that gets you in flow, that gets you in, it gets me, I'll speak for myself, gets me into a state of awareness to enjoy my life. Like, well, I do have that choice every moment. Do I get to be miserable right now and suffer, or do I get to enjoy? And I'm not saying suffering's bad or that it's not going to happen, because stuff happens. People are in pain and agony. Terrible things happen, illness. And while it's not, what better opportunity is it to say, you know, what can I be grateful for right now? How can I honor myself, honoring yourself, to honor your body, to take care of your family.
Yeah, it's very well said. Before we wrap up, what would you say to the people who just don't get it, who do just kind of roll their eyes and go, this stuff, this is nonsense? What do you say to those people? Because there's a lot of those people out there.
Well, I guess if they're happy with their life and everything's going hunky-dory and they don't feel like this would serve them, then great.
Yeah. Good. But also understand that this could serve somebody else, mm-hmm. maybe even somebody else that they care about that could really utilize this type of work to better themselves and their lives.
Yeah.
Yeah. Steph, how do people reach you?
Well, I can give my phone number.
Yeah, we'll post it on here. But if somebody was interested in speaking to you a little bit more about Masterpiece, PEACE, Masterpiece Coaching and Consulting, where would they go and how would they get in contact with you?
You can always look on my Facebook, Steph Levine. Oh, and it's official too. Legally, my name is no longer Martini. It is Steph Levine, Stephanie Miriam Levine.
Right on.
And I'm going to go change my license today after this. And Facebook, Steph Levine, Masterpiece Coaching and Consulting is also on Facebook. I'm working on a website. I don't have it up yet. So it's Masterpiece, PEACE. So think about being the master of your peace when you're next time you're in traffic, mm-hmm. Being the master of your inner peace and masterpieces. I'm actually having a painting coaching retreat coming up May 17th to the 19th. I only have one spot left. It's for 10 women. So if anybody's interested in coming and painting and doing intuitive painting, it's definitely not required to be an artist. You can be an artist. It's 100% not required. This is about not being attached to the outcome. And there's going to be some intuitive movement, which is another part of my business too that I'm implementing. It's called Koya. And it's a beautiful, beautiful practice that there's no way to do it wrong. And you know you're doing it right when it feels good, and more importantly, when it feels true. So, and I'm going to just challenge everyone to think about that in life, that you know you're doing it right when it feels true.
Yeah. So that retreat, you have one spot left for that retreat, and where is that going to be held?
On a beautiful home on South Mountain off a Baseline corridor, Baseline and 24th Street-ish.
Here in Phoenix, Arizona.
Here in Phoenix, yeah. Arizona. And you can call me 602-615-4009 for more specifics on it.
Excellent. Thank you, Steph. I have so much respect and love for you and what you've done for me in my life. And I'm a big believer in what you do and that it can help people. I value the hell out of you. Thank you for being exactly who you are. Yeah. So thanks, everybody, for tuning in to today's podcast. Next week, we're going to have Derek Vogel from Credit Absolute. And we're going to be talking about the nuances of credit, the role that it plays in people's lives, how difficult it can make people's situations. But I'm excited about that. I know Derek's excited about coming on, too. So that's going to be an interesting conversation. That'll be next Thursday. Derek Vogel, Credit Absolute. Thank you guys once again for your support of the Authentic Agent Podcast. We appreciate you very, very much for tuning in, and we will see you next week.